step into a world where stories meet sound. My name is Simar Kaur, host of Melodies of Myth, a show that blends Indian classical and Western music with short tales of culture, history, and identity. Join me every Friday at 3 p.m. only on CFRC. And if you enjoy the music, you can find more by searching Simar Kaur on Spotify. Tune in, unwind, and let the melodies carry you. Once again, it's Melodies of Myth, 3 p.m. every Fridays. Welcome back to Melodies of Myth, where we explore short historical tales blended with Indian classical and Western music. I'm your host, Simar Kaur, and it's an honor to accompany you on this journey of discovering the rich interweaving of music and history. Together, we will explore the stories, traditions, and timeless melodies that have shaped our understanding of this art form. Today, we turn our attention to one of the towering figures in Western music, Ludwig van Beethoven. When we think of Beethoven, we imagine stormy symphonies, heroic piano sonatas, and a composer who seemed to battle fate itself. But behind the image of the untouchable genius was a man of contradictions, fierce, vulnerable, stubborn, tender, and deeply human. Today's episode will focus on those layers. The Beethoven of history, the Beethoven of myth, and the Beethoven whose music still speaks across centuries. Beethoven was born in Bonn in 1770, but it was in Vienna that he made his name. He arrived as a virtuoso pianist, dazzling audiences with his improvisations, and quickly became known as their heir to Mozart and Haydn. But what makes him different, what makes him endure, is not just his mastery of form. It is the way his music carries struggle. The Fifth Symphony's four notes, da-da-da-dum, have become a shorthand for destiny itself knocking at the door. His Ninth Symphony, with its ode to joy, remains an anthem of hope and humanity. In his lifetime, Beethoven's music was already treated as something larger than art. It was legend in the making. And yet, the Beethoven we so often imagine, scowling, wild-haired, pounding the piano, is the only part of the story. He was also a man plagued by illness, family conflict, and above all, the loss of hearing that began in his 20s and grew worse with each passing year. By the time he composed some of his greatest works, he was almost completely deaf. And still, he continued to write symphonies, sonatas, quartets. Music he could no longer hear with his ears, but only with his mind. That tension between human limitation and artistic transcendence is part of why his story resonates. It feels mythic, a man cut off from sound, yet creating some of the greatest soundscapes in history. There is also mystery in Beethoven's private life. Though he never married, he left behind letters filled with passion. None more famous than his secret declaration to the so-called immortal beloved. We don't know for certain who she was, but her shadow lingers in his music, in the tenderness of the Moonlit Sonata, in the longing of his late quartets, in the soaring lyricism of the Emperor Concerto. The immortal beloved has become not just a historical riddle, but a symbol, a reminder that behind every composition lies a beating heart. So today, we will step into his world through stories, through reflection, and of course, through his music. We will now hear myth and memory, how they surround his life, how his struggles shaped his sound, and how his stories continue to echo across time. Stay with me for the next half hour as we explore Beethoven, not only his genius, but the human being, the myth, the voice that still speaks to us all. This is Melodies on Myth, every Friday at 3 p.m. only on CFRC.ca.
Attention, women in science, technology, engineering, and math. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting on your journey, the Society for Canadian Women in Science and Technology is here to support you every step of the way. From mentorship programs to networking and skill-building events, we've got the tools and resources you need to succeed and thrive in STEM. Visit SCWIST.ca to learn more. That's SCWIST.ca. We can't wait to connect with you.
Thank you.
The year is 1812. Beethoven is in his early 40s, already a giant in music, but also a man in turmoil. His hearing is slipping away. He's restless, lonely, and yet he's in love. From a small inn in the spa town of Teplitz, he writes a letter. The words are fevered, aching, and desperate. But the name of the woman he writes to, it's never revealed. The letter begins with a phrase that has haunted musicians and historians for two centuries. It reads, "To my immortal beloved." Beethoven's letter was never delivered. It was discovered after his death in 1827, tucked away among his belongings. Three long pages of handwriting, full of contradictions, moments of soaring devotion, followed by despair, then resolve. "Even in bed," he writes, "my thoughts go out to you, my immortal beloved, my life, my all, farewell." But who was she? That's the mystery. Was it Antoine Brunato, a married aristocrat he adored? Was it Josephine Brunswick, his piano student and possible secret love? Or someone else entirely? Theories abound, but no one knows for certain. But the letter itself has become a myth. You see, the idea that behind all of Beethoven's genius, all of his music, was an unfulfilled love that burned in silence. He never married, but he poured everything he could not say into his music. The aching second movement of the sonata, the tenderness of the fourth piano concerto, the storm and the triumph of the fifth symphony, all of them can be read as letters to another kind, written not on paper, but in sound. When he could no longer hear, Beethoven wrote as if composing directly into silence, music only he could imagine. Scholars often call that his late style, but in a way, it was also his most intimate diary. His only way of saying, "This is what I feel, this is who I love." What makes the immortal beloved letter so powerful is that it collapses the distance between the great composer and the man himself. We usually imagine Beethoven as the scowling genius, pounding the piano, battling fate, but here, in his own words, he is vulnerable. He worries about distance, about absence, about the impossibility of their love. He writes, "Love demands everything, and rightly so. Thus it is with me towards you, and with you towards me." It's raw, it's human, and it reminds us that even the most legendary figures ache in the same ways that we do. The woman he wrote to may never have even read the letter. She may not even have known what she meant to him, but in a sense, she didn't need to. Because every time we hear the slow, yearning melodies of Beethoven's work, we hear her presence. Whoever she was, she lives on in his notes. The immortal beloved is not just a person. She's become a symbol of music itself, the one companion that never left him. And so, we end not with certainty, but with mystery. The immortal beloved may never be identified, and perhaps that is fitting, because Beethoven's greatest love story was not just with a woman. It was with sound. His music remains his truest confession, his eternal letter, not sealed in a drawer, but open, alive, and wanting to be heard.
Calling all women in STEM. Are you interested in joining a group that advocates for lifting up women and other underrepresented groups in STEM? Well then, WISE is the place to be. Women in Science and Engineering at Queen's University is a group of passionate women creating welcoming and inclusive spaces for future engineers, scientists, and leaders. When you join WISE, you'll have the opportunity to learn from experienced pros in the field, grow your network, and be a source of inspiration for the young women in the Kingston community. Follow our Instagram at QueensWISE or visit our website www.queenswise.ca to learn.
And now we turn to one of Beethoven's most beloved works, the Moonlit Sonata. First movement, written in 1801, it's a piece that feels less like a sonata and more like a dream, a hushed meditation in broken chords, as though Beethoven were whispering secrets to the piano in the middle of the night. What makes this performance special is the artist behind it. Canadian pianist Marnie Laird, she's part of the Brooklyn Classical Ensemble, known for bringing a fresh, yet deeply expressive voice to Canadian repertoire. Born and trained in Canada, Laird has built a career that bridges words, concert pianist, chamber musician, and even co-founder of the crossover group Brooklyn Duo, which blends classical piano with contemporary sounds. Her interpretation of Moonlit captures both the intimacy and the vastness of Beethoven's vision, at once fragile and timeless. So here is the Moonlit Sonata, first movement performed by Canadian pianist Marnie Laird with Brooklyn Classical. Listen for the way the opening chords seem to hover between shadow and light. Enjoy.
Attention, women in science, technology, engineering, and math. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting on your journey, the Society for Canadian Women in Science and Technology is here to support you every step of the way. From mentorship programs to networking and skill-building events, we've got the tools and resources you need to succeed and thrive in STEM. Visit SCWIST.ca to learn more. That's SCWIST.ca. We can't wait to connect with you.
No matter your disability, you likely face barriers in your everyday life. At Neil Squire, we help break those barriers down by helping you access employment, technology, and the tools you need to live your life to the fullest. As a nonprofit organization, we empower people with disabilities all across Canada, and we are here for you too. Visit neilsquire.ca to learn more.
Listening to a piece like that reminds me of how powerful reflection can be. Music slows us down. It creates a space where we can step outside the rush of the day and just be with our own thoughts. And then again, it's important to remember that reflection isn't always about answers. And with that, our journey together today comes to an end. You've been listening to Melodies of Myth with me, Simmer Kaur, here on CFRC 101.9 FM, Queen's Radio. Meet us back here every Friday at 3 p.m. for another journey into music and storytelling. Until then, take care, keep listening, and may you always find a little melody in your everyday life. See you next Friday at 3 p.m.
Its very core, drag is art.
I now recognize the representative from Delaware, Mr. McBride.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Chairman, have you no decency?
We can't be silent now. We must speak up.
It's going to be a hard-won battle, for sure.
We took him to court, and we won.
I like that superstar. That's good.
This opinion is devastating.
Guys, I need you to make me a woman.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Our news rep crew has taken time off for the holidays, but they'll be back in 2026 on our week of January 12th program. This week and next.
525,600 minutes. 525,000 moments so dear. 25,600 minutes.
We continue our review of some of the news and feature stories on This Way Out during the past 12 months.
I'm David Hunt.
And I'm Melanie Keller.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 8th, 2025.
$8 million to promote LGBTQI+ in the African nation of Lesotho, which nobody has ever heard of.
U.S. President Donald Trump's State of the Union address was a record-setting, almost two-hour marathon of lies and bizarre claims. Lesotho's leading queer advocacy group was dismayed by Trump's accusation. The People's Matrix spokesperson, Tamposa Motapang, told Agence France-Presse, "We are literally not receiving grants from the U.S. We have no idea of the allocation of $8 million. We do not know who received or is going to receive that money. We do not have such monies or a contract that would even reach a quarter of half of that money." Lesotho's government is not taking this matter lightly, according to Foreign Minister Lejeune Mpojene. He told the French news agency, "We did not expect a head of state to refer to another sovereign nation in such a manner." An official letter of protest will be delivered to the Oval Office, which Lesotho has heard of.
$8 million for making mice transgender. This is real.
Well, no, it's not. This eyebrow-raising claim during Trump's State of the Union address again demonstrated the incompetence of the administration's effort to slash allegedly wasteful spending. In their zeal to erase transgender people from government policy, they targeted a government-funded study involving transgenic mice. Put simply, a transgenic mouse's genes have been modified to better reflect how human tissue reacts. They are invaluable in biomedical research.
Trump crowed about all his anti-trans executive orders and also targeted diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, DEI, derisively describing such efforts as wokeness.
We're getting wokeness out of our schools and out of our military, and it's already out, and it's out of our society. We don't want it. Wokeness is trouble. Wokeness is bad. It's gone. It's gone. And we feel so much better for it, don't we? Don't we feel better?
Do we?
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 15th, 2025.
I first want to start off and say, at its very core, drag is art.
Transgender Representative Zoe Zephyr was eloquent this week when the Montana State House was considering whether to label drag performances inherently sexual.
Drag is a beautiful art. Drag has a deep history in this country, and it is a history that is important to my community. You know, if you are a woman in this body wearing a suit today, you are challenging gender norms that existed long ago. And in some ways, drag does work to challenge those norms.
The proposed legislation would have mandated fines of up to $5,000 per performance and allowed parents or guardians to sue drag performers for allegedly harming their children.
Drag story hours I have been to here in Montana, they are like Disney princesses reading to people. These are spaces where people sit down in libraries and parents elect to bring their children and learn about books and the love of reading and to hear stories told from members of my community. That is important and that is beautiful, and I do not think that we should be standing up and saying that this art form, because it's somehow connected to my community, is not allowed.
After listening to Montana Transgender State Representative Zoe Zephyr, 13 Republicans joined all the Democrats to reject House Bill 675. The final tally was 44 in favor and 55 against, with one Republican absent.
Finally, the U.S. House of Representatives Foreign Relations Subcommittee became a battleground against Republican resistance to the existence of transgender people this week.
I now recognize the representative from Delaware, Mr. McBride.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Subcommittee Chair Keith Self kicked off his hearings with an insult to the country's first transgender congressperson, Sarah McBride. McBride swiped back at the Texas congressman's intentional offense. Then, her fellow Democrat and ranking member Bill Keating of Massachusetts stepped in to rebuke Chairman Self.
Ranking Member Keating, also wonderful.
Mr. Chairman, could you repeat your introduction again, please?
Yes, we have set the standard on the floor of the House, and I'm simply...
What is that standard, Mr. Chairman? Would you repeat what you just said when you introduced a duly elected representative from the United States of America, please?
I will. The representative from Delaware, Mr. McBride.
Mr. Chairman, you are out of order. Mr. Chairman, have you no decency? I mean, I've come to know you a little bit, but this is not decent.
We will continue this.
You will not continue it with me unless you introduce a duly elected representative the right way.
This hearing is adjourned.
Survivors of the generation that started the LGBTQ plus movement in Australia are like gold, and mining the life story of Peter de Waal is a rich pursuit. Born in the Netherlands, de Waal in the early 1970s was a founding member of the Sydney organization Campaign Against Moral Persecution, or CAMP. He was there for Australia's Stonewall at the first gay and lesbian Mardi Gras and was still on the front lines for the marriage equality struggle. This Way Out's Barry McKay joined the throng for the March 24th launch of de Waal's amazing memoir, held at Balmain Town Hall, home of the first CAMP events.
So, Peter de Waal, you're having your book launch today.
Indeed.
It's called It Wasn't Dutch Courage. Can you tell me a little bit about your life story?
It's been very long, diverse. There's been lots of ups and downs. I've had lots of childhood traumas because of the war, but I've been able to turn that into courage and resilience, and I've been able to help the community have better lives.
So you were born in The Hague?
Yes, 1938.
And you came to Australia in the 50s?
1957.
What would be your advice to an international audience?
Stand together, work together, work in solidarity, and let your voices be heard. Silence is not an option. That's what happened in 1930 with the Nazis. There were too many people who kept silent. Later on, they regretted it. So what I'm saying is we can't be silent now. We must speak up.
Peter de Waal, congratulations on the launch of your book.
It's called It Wasn't Dutch Courage.
It Wasn't Dutch Courage by Peter de Waal.
Barry McKay, This Way Out, Sydney, Australia.
Crowds on the steps of the Hall of Justice in Port of Spain, the capital city of Trinidad and Tobago, erupted in cheers on learning that the High Court had struck down the Caribbean nation's archaic anti-gay sodomy statutes. But that was then, April 12, 2018. 7 years later, March 25, 2025, the silence outside the courthouse was deafening. That was the day that a three-judge appeals court panel overturned the High Court ruling, putting the anti-gay laws back on the books. But there's one voice that refuses to be silenced.
It's going to be a hard-fought victory, but I'm going to win. I'm going to win.
That voice belongs to Jason Jones, a biracial, binational, queer activist who sued his home country in 2017, asserting that the colonial-era ban on gay sex violates his constitutional rights to privacy, liberty, and freedom of expression. Jones, who has fought for human rights on two continents for four decades, isn't about to stop now. He's appealing the appellate court decision, and this time the courtroom drama will play out in London before the Judicial Committee of the Privy Council. A ruling in Jones's favor could lead to the decriminalization of same-sex intimacy in other Commonwealth countries, potentially impacting millions of LGBTQ people in former UK colonies.
The thing with the JCPC is that even though they're white, British, and sit in London, when they sit on a matter like this, it's as if they're sitting in Trinidad and Tobago. So it's one thing to say, oh, well, you know, throw our hands up. We have nothing to do. It's a savings clause. But it's another one to condemn LGBTQ plus people to a society that's endemically homophobic using laws that you created. So it's going to be a hard won battle for sure.
For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Natalie Munoz.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending April 26th, 2025. They were chanting, "When trans rights are under attack, what do we do? Fight back." Hundreds of thousands of protesters filled the streets of London to denounce the UK Supreme Court's decision that excludes transgender women from the legal definition of woman. The April 19th emergency demonstration in London's Parliament Square was organized by 24 queer and human rights groups on less than 3 days' notice. Organizers and police officials alike marveled at the size of the crowd that spilled over into St. James Park. Pink, white, and blue trans rights flags waved as passionate pro-trans speakers expressed their anger over the High Court decision. Demonstrations were also held in Liverpool, Manchester, Leeds, Sheffield, and Nottingham. Photos of the massive crowds flooded social media. More than 1,000 people also marched through the central square of the Welsh capital of Cardiff. Future actions are planned for cities including Cambridge and Oxford. Protesters also hit the streets in Edinburgh and Glasgow, Scotland, where it all began. A 2018 Scottish law required that at least 50% of board members on public bodies be women. Lower courts had ruled that transgender women with gender recognition certificates declaring them to be female could be considered women for purposes of that law. About 8,500 gender recognition certificates have been issued, according to the Associated Press. The five-judge Supreme Court panel's April 16th decision overturned the previous rulings. It concluded that the legal definition of sex refers only to biological or sex assigned at birth. The High Court essentially rejected the concept of gender identity. Anti-trans forces interpret the ruling to mean that trans women and non-binary people can be blocked from using sex-segregated facilities such as bathrooms and changing rooms. It also implies that female hospital wards and sports could be closed to trans women. However, the Supreme Court insisted that provisions of the Equality Act barring discrimination against transgender people still apply.
More of This Way Out's Queer History of 2025 after this brief but compelling message.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
We'll greet a drag virtuoso violist, hear about a major setback at the U.S. Supreme Court, and review the upcoming season at what used to be the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. As a Queer History of 2025 continues on This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap. A summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending May 10th, 2025.
Transgender people in the U.S. Armed Services have been on a real roller coaster ride. Trump banned trans troops during his first administration. Then President Joe Biden lifted it. Now, they're at least temporarily banned again. Second Lieutenant Nick Talbot of the U.S. Army Reserve is a lead plaintiff in one of the lawsuits challenging the trans military ban. He used his uniform as a symbol of his courageous stand during an interview with CNN.
I do remember kind of putting this on for the first time, and I was starting to think I was never going to get to wear this, and here I am. And especially now, you know, getting to be a lieutenant and getting to wear my rank, I worked really hard for this. I think that it's just absolutely ridiculous to insinuate that trans folks and trans service members are, you know, going home and trying to pretend to be something that we're not.
Colonel Bree Fram has spent more than two decades in the service, the last 4 years in the U.S. Space Force. She was defiant on Baltimore, Maryland TV station WJZ.
I know at my core what I stand for, and I believe in the ideals of America and the oath that I swore to defend. When that ruling came out, I and thousands of other transgender service members were doing the jobs and the missions that the military has assigned to us. I've served over 22 years in uniform, and if there's one thing I can guarantee, that whether it is in uniform or not, my time of service is not done.
Maine's Democratic Governor Janet Mills got the last laugh this week when the U.S. Department of Agriculture backed down from its threats to defund the state's school lunches program. Mills' confrontation with Donald Trump over her state's laws protecting transgender female athletes went viral in mid-February.
Is Maine here, the governor of Maine?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you not going to comply with it?
I'm complying with state and federal laws.
We are the federal law. Mm-hmm. So you better comply, because otherwise you're not getting any federal funding.
See you in court.
Well, I did see him in court.
Governor Mills delivered the follow-up at a May 9 press conference.
And on May 2nd, just 1 month after the USDA's letter, the USDA has backed down and they've agreed to stop freezing funds for the school lunch program that feeds 172,000 kids in Maine. And it's good to feel a victory like this. We took them to court and we won.
Pride Month is upon us, and fear of the Trump administration has led to many venues canceling LGBTQ plus concerts around the U.S., drag performances, and anything even vaguely associated with diversity, equity, and inclusion are the prime targets for censorship. That's what makes a Los Angeles event featuring a RuPaul's Drag Race favorite special. And This Way Out's Brian DeShazer knows it's special for an even more intriguing reason.
Thor G. Thor, drag queen and superstar, welcome to This Way Out.
I like that, superstar. That's good. So I was in the works, I mean, a year ago or whatever, with a Florida Symphony Orchestra. But because of everything going on with our administration and the bands, they called me and they said, yeah, we're going to have to put this show and this contract on the back burner. And I went, what? And, you know, I was a little like, I didn't know what was going on. And then I quickly was like frustrated and I looked it up and I talked to a lot of people and I went, oh my God, I'm like one of those performances. And whether or not you like it, most of these large symphony orchestras are funded by very religious, conservative people that come from money and their foundations. I really just feel like I'm me and my show is really, really interesting, amazing, funny, a little bit different, a little quirky, with beautiful music and cheeky humor. And I happen to be a man in a dress.
Does it shock you that you've got that reaction, or that you're the victim, I guess, of this kind of legislation?
I think it takes a lot to shock me. I really just keep going. I don't get lost. I don't get upset. I just keep doing it. And I really do feel like just doing my show is the largest act of rebellion that you could possibly do when we have standing ovations and we're sold out anyway. And then I can convince some of the conservative members of the orchestra to be like, this was the best. I'm like, I know. Like, right. I know.
For This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer.
I'm not a mistake. I'm not your verdict. I wasn't born to be judged. I am the voice you were never taught to hear. But it sings, it beats, it shines.
Transgender people got another legal gut punch when the U.S. Supreme Court upheld Tennessee's ban on pediatric gender-affirming health care. The conservative majority handed down its 6-3 ruling on June 18th. Their decision lowered the bar for establishing the constitutionality of Tennessee's ban, and that imperils the rights of young trans patients in the 20 other states with similar laws.
I'm David Hunt. I asked Brad Sears, founding director of the Williams Institute and a longtime legal scholar at the University of California, Los Angeles, to take a deep dive into the court's sometimes tortured reasoning in United States v. Scrimeti.
This opinion is devastating, but it starts with one short, simple sentence that there are 1.6 million transgender people in the United States, and it defines what being transgender means. To me, that seems like a clear rejection of the Trump administration's portrayal of transgender people as either confused or people who are trying to commit fraud on others around them.
In her dissenting opinion, Justice Sonia Sotomayor accused her conservative colleagues of abandoning transgender children and their families to political whims. And she said the decision will do irrevocable damage to the Equal Protection Clause and invite legislatures to engage in discrimination by hiding blatant sex classifications in plain sight. American Civil Liberties Union attorney Chase Strangio, the transgender man who argued the case before the High Court last December, had this reaction. Although this is a painful setback, it does not mean that transgender people and our allies are left with no options to defend our freedom, our health care, or our lives. The court left undisturbed Supreme Court and lower court precedent that other examples of discrimination against transgender people are unlawful. We are determined as ever to fight for the dignity and equality of every transgender person, and we will continue to do so with defiant strength, a restless resolve, and a lasting commitment to our families, our communities, and the freedom we all deserve.
Finally, for an anti-woke schedule that's supposed to be free of drag, the 2025-2026 season at the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts will still feature plenty of men in dresses. President Donald Trump's all-caps rant on his Feeble Truth social platform screamed, "No more drag shows or other anti-American propaganda," when he announced in February that he had fired the board and installed himself as chair. Gay sycophant Rick Grinnell was named as the head of the nation's Washington, D.C. showplace. Trump declared, "Just last year, the Kennedy Center featured drag shows specifically targeting our youth. This will stop." Maybe it escaped the reality TV star's notice, or maybe it's just a classic Trumpian reversal of policy, but here's a taste of the upcoming Kennedy Center season.
"Guys, I need you to make me a woman."
"What?"
"Miranda is hiring a nanny, and I put myself up for the job as a woman, and I have an interview tomorrow."
"What?"
"Guys, please, I'm begging you. Make me a woman. Give it a shot. Come on and give me the best that you've got."
The hit Broadway musical, Mrs. Doubtfire, tells the story of a father posing as a female nanny to spend more time with his children after a divorce. That's not all. The Kennedy Center will also host Monty Python's Spamalot, with men dressed as women in prominent scenes. Moulin Rouge will be performed, including a drag queen character named Baby Doll. someone will take the role of Chicago's Mama Morton, made famous by queer icon Queen Latifah and drag queen Jinx Monsoon. Chicago character Mary Sunshine is revealed to be male in one of the show's most memorable scenes. So, maybe just a few more drag shows, Mr. President. I'm Ava Davis.
A Queer History of 2025 concludes next time on This Way Out. Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions, Inc. Greg Gordon produced this week's Queerest News of 2025 feature with archival news and feature reporters David Hunt, Melanie Keller, Tanya Kane Perry, Michael LeBeau, Barry McKay, John Dyer V, Brian DeShazer, and Ava Davis. You heard music by the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir, No Greater Time Collective, Thorgy Thor, and Eric Burchard, along with excerpts from Camelot, Mrs. Doubtfire the Musical, and Chicago. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Steve Sims of Seattle, Washington, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078 USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappelle, and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. The happiest of holidays, and thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KTAL Las Cruces, New Mexico, WODU Norfolk, Virginia, hey Norfolk, to MIA Griffith, New South Wales, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.
On CFRC 101.9 FM every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m., you'll hear Finding a Voice. My name is Bruce, host of that poetry-focused spoken word program. On it, you'll hear local readings and events, occasionally telephoned interviews across Canada, and always a touch of music. Again, Finding a Voice, here every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Check it out. Hope to catch you there.
Hi, we're Short Rock to Pluto, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.